Good evening, Boston. Welcome to BNN News. I'm Faith Thamafidon. Thanks for tuning in. On Earth Day, residents and visitors honored our planet, and Boston Green Energy advocates raised awareness about the future of energy.
On Monday, tree huggers and nature lovers from all over New England gathered at City Hall Plaza to appreciate the natural beauty of Boston and spread awareness of the future of green energy.
I think Earth Day is a great day for everyone to take a moment to reflect on what the earth means to them and their consumption, and as well as other things such as their carbon footprint and maybe what they would like to do better for the world so we can, you know, have these resources for generations to come.
For me, what Earth Day means is a recognition that we need to try to be mindful of our home, planet Earth, that if we don't try to save it, nobody else is going to, and an awful lot of business interests seem to not think about what they're doing to the planet. If somebody doesn't speak up, we'll lose it, and we won't have the planet for future generations, for our children.
Attendees learned about green energy alternatives from Massachusetts Clean Energy Center and Boston Community Choice Electricity. The groups informed residents on the positive impact of renewable energy sources, like solar and wind power, while emphasizing everyone's role in combating climate change and reducing carbon emissions.
Earth Day is more than just recycling. It is taking small steps in a lot of different areas of your life to be cleaner and greener and more energy efficient. And we all need to be aware of the impact that we have on the earth, and we all need to find ways that we can be more sustainable. And it is possible for all sorts of different types of people. It's not just the wealthy or the, you know, very successful. It's possible for all sorts of people to be sustainable.
Today is just a day to remind that every day we should be caring about our planet. Every day we should be making decisions and being intentional about how we care about our planet and making sure that we're securing it for our future generations to come to enjoy this beautiful place we call land.
It was a day for residents and visitors to admire the natural beauty of Mother Earth and treasure her abundant gifts.
To me, Earth Day means giving back to the earth that gives so much to us and lessening our footprint on this planet and appreciating all the things that we get from the planet.
It means a day where we can remember how privileged we are of living in this planet and also all the challenges that we face to make sure that it's still a good place to live for all the generations to come.
In Medford, City Life Vita Urbana spoke out against real estate investment groups funding the gentrification of greater Boston neighborhoods.
Save Brooks Park tenants! No more mass evictions!
In Medford, City Life Vita Urbana rallied with the Brooks Park Tenants Association to bring attention to the dozens of residents who the housing advocate group says are victims of real estate investment groups DAH Medford LLC and Charles Gate Management.
Since last year when Charles Gate bought this building, people are struggling because they don't know where they're going to live. They have their families live right here. They don't know where to go. Because like the cost of living in Massachusetts, ridiculous, the prices and everything. And people don't have any condition to move anywhere else. Like they increase more than 70% of our rent right here. And they just give us 60 days to leave.
21 residents signed a letter to the new owners, urging negotiations with the Brooks Park Tenant Association on controlled rents and evictions. The association says Charles Gate has ignored their letter. Tenants received notices of high rent increases and threats of no-fault evictions if there's no compliance within 60 days.
So I've been here since 2001, and it's a lovely community, diverse and inclusive. And the new owners are evicting everybody or trying to evict everybody so that they can go in and do renovations and raise the rents. And it's just wrong because it's a lovely community and you want apartment buildings like that.
They want to raise our rents to market value. And which is just not affordable at all for anyone that is trying to live and work. And they tried to raise my rent by $200 with 2 weeks notice. I was able to negotiate it down, but they intend to raise it back up once my 6 months is up. No one can afford the insane rent prices for a studio apartment too.
Three households have gone to house in court for no-fault evictions, represented by Greater Boston Legal Services. City Life Vita Urbana is helping to lead the larger statewide fight for rent control through legislation like the proposed act enabling cities and towns to stabilize rents and the Tenant Opportunity to Purchase Act.
It's sad to see it when a large investment group comes in and they see our neighbors' homes and they look at it and they see that this is, they say this is a return on investment, this is a gold bar for us, and they kick our neighbors out onto the streets without providing any alternative housing. Homes are not investments, they are places where people live and they should be treated that way.
Naturally occurring affordable housing in the community is going away because this building has been purchased and now it's going to be renovated and converted into market rate housing. What we know here in Greater Boston is that market rate housing is completely unaffordable for most people. And when affordable housing gets turned into market rate housing or luxury housing, which is what we see over and over in the community, it means that Medford can no longer be a community for people from all backgrounds, from all life experiences. It's no longer a diverse community when this leaves the city.
City Life Vita Urbana says they'll continue defending vulnerable tenants across Greater Boston.
Last weekend, a beloved comics festival for people of color featuring POC writers and illustrators captivated Roxbury once again.
Boston Comics and Color Festival returned to Roxbury on Saturday, taking comic book lovers on a ride. The family-friendly event awakened the imaginations of young people as they thumbed through graphic novels, seeing themselves reflected in the pages created by artists of color. And that's exactly the point.
Here at Comics in Color, we say that diverse storytelling is good for everyone. We really believe that the more people tell their stories, the more understanding it can foster. It's also very important for people of color to see themselves represented in media. And not only represented, but their stories told authentically by people that look like themselves. So that's why we put this together, so that young people can come and see comics that reflect their own experience and people that look like them creating the stories.
Walking through Comics of Color, like the main thing I see is representation. It's always a positive thing to see people who look like you, who have the same lived experience as you, actually making art and creating art and being successful in promoting their own art to the community.
For many families, the festival is a chance to bond with their kids over graphic stories. But there's a deeper message at play about the right to exist.
In the 1970s, there was this term that was created called symbolic annihilation. And basically the idea is that by not showing someone, you're kind of unmaking them or destroying them. And so when you don't see yourself reflected in the society that you participate in, it actually can unmake your self-esteem. And I think that people who are overrepresented like take that for granted, but it means a great deal for people who are coming from marginalized groups to see themselves reflected in superheroes and science fiction and things of that nature.
People enjoyed live art demos and buying comics directly from creators in the Artist Valley. Comic book artists appreciated seeing how their work resonated with the public.
I have a passion for telling stories through my paintings. I am exploring the idea of life and death through a sci-fi lens with goddesses and skulls. And I love when different people look at my paintings and they can get different stories and meanings and metaphors out of the same image. And I love that.
Comic book writer Barbara Thomas enjoys stepping away from the world through the art form.
Graphic novels are a great escape. They have world building in them that can take you out of this time and space. We have so much going on with social media and such negative stuff in the news, you know, the world's on fire. And when you read a graphic novel, for those few moments, you get to be in a different space. I mean, it may be post-apocalyptic in the story, but there's usually a thread of hope. There is a story arc, and it's just wonderful.
In its fourth year, Boston Comics and Color welcomed nearly 1,000 people at the Reggie Lewis Center. Organizers say the festival is vital and continues to grow.
Dr. Ricky S. Stern is the founder and executive director of E-Inc., the Planet Science Learning and Action Center based in Boston. She visited us in studio to share the upcoming Wild and Scenic Film Festival happening Saturday, April 27th, and what audiences can expect of the annual event.
I'm joined today by Dr. Ricky Stern, founder and executive director of E-Inc. and the Wild and Scenic Film Festival. So you joined us in studio last year to discuss the 2023 Wild and Scenic Film Festival. What can you tell us about how last year went?
Oh gosh, it was really, it was great. We have this unbelievably wonderful relationship with Atlantic Wharf where they just, you know, let us have this stunning space for a night. And we can just bring in all these new people to learn about the Earth, and it's just fun, you know. It's just fun, but we had a great event. It was something where people like come to it with really good feelings. They want to understand things. I think people come to a film festival like this just thinking, "Wow, I'm going to learn something. I'm going to get excited about something. I'm going to be moved by something." I think those are the reasons to do something like this, to do a film festival, and at least in the world that I'm in, which is the environmental world, that becomes so precious. And it was fun. Yeah.
Awesome. And can you tell us about what E-Inc. is and why you guys decided to create the film festival?
Yes. Okay. So E-Inc. is a 22-year-old organization. It and I are aging in place. And so it's been a really great journey. I decided at some point after my doctorate that I didn't really want to be an academic. I wanted to do something about the planet. It was a time that climate change was really starting to be in the discussion. And so I found a couple of people and we were all in the same perspective around how we wanted to work with kids. And in so many situations, kids just don't really understand yet a lot of science. It takes a long time to learn science. There's a lot of difficulty in the school systems around having enough time for science right now because kids are coming from all over and they need many other things that sort of first. So we go into every one of these schools and after schools and day schools and knock it out of the park on teaching a topic. And each year it's a different topic, and every site gets to pick their topic. We're in 31 sites, and we make a big difference. And it's been a very, very, not just exciting, but fulfilling experience to see the organization constantly growing and, you know, making something good out of difficult times.
Absolutely. And what can we expect from this year's festival happening Saturday, April 27th? In the Atlantic Wharf, and how will it build on last year's films?
Well, let's see. The films this year are really interesting, and there's a couple. Maybe I'll highlight one or two just to without giving it away.
Of course. What are you most excited about, and what can you tell us about them?
Well, one of the films that really caught everybody's attention was this. I think it's called Abundance. Sorry, it's called Abundance. And right at the beginning of the pandemic, schools were closing, and universities were closing. And there was this group of young people who started to realize that in the area where their university was stationed, there was a lot of difficulty for people to get food. It was more rural, so there wasn't that much opportunity to just have enough for the families. And so they tried to see if they could come up with some networking to get more food for the families. People were these huge lines, and you see in cars of people just trying to get a bag of food to eat. So what was really great is that these young people totally teamed up. They started to network and try to get ways to get food to families. But I don't want to give this away, but I will. The thing that happens is supermarkets really throw away a huge amount of food. I mean, I think that's a known story.
Yeah.
So here was this one third of the food from people's different places that they had and could sell, but they weren't allowed to. And that was shocking, shocking. So there was this moment where the kids just put out this APB, please, you know, rethink this. And one man who's an onion farmer donates all his onions.
Wow.
Right? And suddenly another guy is embarrassed because this man did it.
Yeah.
And all it starts to become something. They network, they network, they network. And in the end, they not only network, they start to hook up across the country. My university is also closed. We want to do something. What can we do? And this place is called Abundance is going on still. These people, young people, they grew it into this, you know, amazing company that is making a difference. And it's just a great film. I'm sure people will love it, you know.
Yeah.
And maybe the other one that I get a kick at is there's one called Bear Coast, where you think of bears and everybody's like running away. They're going to eat me. They're going to smack me, whatever it's going to be. This was the greatest film about bears. It was so adorable. Families and how they're getting to, you know, how they treat and what they do and how interesting they are. It'll change your perspective, you know. And maybe by saying that, I should just also, you know, not give too much away. But, I mean, I think that's really why we do it. It's never simple to do the work of making the festival. But you feel like when you're up there watching the people that have come to see the films, that they are really, they've grown when they walk out. Right? There's something about seeing film tell you a short story or show you how people are living or show you what's important about the planet.
Right.
That is, you can't beat it. It directly tells you, you can do this, you can help this. There's something out there I can make a difference with.
Absolutely. So. And, you know, you're sort of talking about what you want audiences to take away from this year's festival.
Yeah.
Appreciation of the earth, of each other. Can you speak to that a little bit more?
Yeah, you know, we get 100 films, and it's really hard to take it apart. But we have 11 stories to tell, and there, you know, about, you know, the one about abundance being an example. But what happens is there are so many ways to sort of cut the pie about what is important on the planet. But if you can give people really beautiful stories, like I'll give you one more. There's this woman trying to save sloths. I'm embarrassed to say I can't remember which of the South American countries we were in, but forgive me. And the sloths are getting endangered, and so they made this whole network of it's like a ribbon of highways, but it's all the way up into the canopy with strings and wires. And so the sloths can go anywhere they need to just by climbing across from tree to tree. And
wow.
No one had ever thought of that before. It's just fabulous. You know, people really care about the animal world. They care about the planet. And those are the people that come to our event. They want to know more.
Mm-hmm.
And it's great stuff. It really is.
In honor of the recent Black Maternal Health Week, we invited ABCD Medical Director Dr. Frinny Polanco-Walters and Tiffany Vassell, registered nurse and co-manager of community engagement and communications at Neighborhood Birth Center, to discuss the discrepancies between white and black women's maternal health care and how we can better advocate for black mothers during their pregnancies. Here's our interview.
So we're just coming out of Black Maternal Health Week, and last week, Action for Boston Community Development, ABCD, hosted a screening of the award-winning documentary Birthing Justice at the Strand Theater, which discusses the inequality surrounding black motherhood in the nation. Can you talk about what you took away from that documentary and how it resonated with you both as healthcare professionals?
Yeah, for me, it was a very powerful documentary. I think they did a fantastic job showing what is going on. This is a public health crisis that our mothers, and especially black mothers, are dying, and their babies are dying. And what I took from it is that 84% of these deaths are preventable, which means that there's a lot that we can do.
Yeah, so what I took from it, especially towards the end,
was the focus on abundance, joy, and liberation. Yes, the documentary is about the disparities and the inequities that are happening around Black maternal health, but we also need to remember this is a very special moment. People are having babies, bringing babies into the world, and it's very important that yes, we address the disparities, but also focus on the why. Let's bring it back to the joy, the abundance, the love, the sacredness of birthing.
I think that's an excellent point. It's about remembering the joy, and mm-hmm. this should be a beautiful time in yes. a Black woman's life, and we have to make sure that she's sufficiently supported.
Yes.
I'd love to talk more about ABCD. It's actually made history. It was one of the first, along with the University of Tufts, to establish the very first health center with the Geiger Gibson Community Health Center in the nation in 1965. ABCD is also a Title X recipient. Franny, I'd love for you to talk a little bit about what it means to be a Title X recipient, and what do you make of reproductive health justice in light of our current situation in the country?
Yeah, so ABCD is a community action organization providing services to many, many Boston residents, and actually in the Boston, greater Boston area. And we touch upon about 100,000 residents per year. And with the health services, which is the area that I'm the medical director for, I will say somewhere around 30,000 people. Mm-hmm. And we provide family planning services to the community. And I think that it's really important that people know that we're doing this because we do a really good job at it. We've been doing it for so long, like you mentioned. And we want to make sure that our residents are getting the information, education, and care that they deserve in order to have, for example, a healthy pregnancy.
And speaking of healthy pregnancies, when we're looking at the statistics for Black women, Black women are 3 to 5 times more likely to die from pregnancy complications than white women, according to the Population Reference Bureau. Can you talk a little bit about some of the systemic factors that are driving these statistics?
Sure. So it's multi-tiered, right? So we know that Black women are experiencing cardiomyopathy, elevated blood pressures, right? Preeclampsia, hemorrhaging, all these issues while pregnant and having their babies. But the major factor is the social determinants of health, right? What is happening before this person is pregnant? What is happening in the community? Do people have sufficient housing, safe housing, right? Is it a food desert? Are moms able to get good nutrition for themselves and for their babies and while they're pregnant, right? All these things are factors that complicate pregnancy, and those issues aren't necessarily being addressed. So when folks now come in to have their babies, they're experiencing these disparities.
And then I'm very curious about this report, a 2023 report that came out of the Boston Public Health Commission. It showed that the highest rates of infant mortality are in Hyde Park, and with Mattapan and Dorchester leading the city in low birth weights and preterm births. What do you make of these findings, and how can the city of Boston work to help improve these health outcomes for Black mothers?
Yeah, it goes with the literature that has been showing that Black communities are the most impacted by deaths related to pregnancy, complications, and infant mortality. And I think it's really important to know that this is related, like Tiffany was saying, to social determinants of health, but also structural racism, mm-hmm. Which we have seen that, you know, biologically, there's no difference between races. Races are social constructs. So what is it that is causing Black women to die at higher rates and their babies than, you know, white women, for example, or white babies? And we have to look at that information and see in Boston what is impacting that. Like she mentioned, housing, having racism, experiencing that, you know, and having the stress that comes from that is also something that impacts them. And we need to go to those communities and ask the residents to work together with the community to see how we can improve their health, their access. Social determinants of health actually impact health more than going going to see a doctor. Mm-hmm. 60% of someone's health is dependent on these things. Do they have housing? Do they have access to foods? Are those, you know, healthy foods? Do they have education? And the research has shown that even with same amount of education, same amount of food security, Black women still are fare worse when it comes to their maternal health.
Yeah, we need to call community members to the table and ask them what they need, right, to live well, to flourish within their community. The people closest to the problem are closest to the solution. We can't create the solution for folks. We really need the voices to figure out how we can fight these disparities.
And can you tell us more about the work happening at Neighborhood Birth Center and ABCD that's happening to support our Black mothers?
Yeah, so very, very exciting news with Neighborhood Birth Center. We actually just closed our capital campaign. We raised $3 million from small donors over 18 months. We have land in Roxbury at 14 Winthrop Street. We're very excited about that. We hope to be breaking ground sometime this summer. We started workshops in the fall, Empowered Birth, for birthing people or people wanting to become pregnant. And we teach topics such as what's informed consent, what's trauma-informed care, what's equity, what's access, what's reproductive justice. And this spring, we actually expanded our workshop offering with a grant from the City of Boston for $50,000. Wow. So now we have a three-part series of Empowered Birth, a three-part series of Postpartum Power, and we have Empowered Health, which we offer to partner community organizations. And in the summer, we will be offering Empowered Birth in Haitian Creole. So we're wanting to educate the community. What does it mean to advocate for yourself, right? What does it mean to go to your visit and be well-informed about your pregnancy, about yourself, and about what you need as a birthing person? And we're wanting to share this across all of Boston, across all of Massachusetts, really. Yeah, there's one birth center in all of Massachusetts. Cambridge has closed, Beverly has closed. And we're really looking forward to opening our doors and welcoming people in, not just for birthing care, but also care across the reproductive spectrum.
That's so exciting. And speaking of advocacy, how can Black women advocate for their health now, especially in the early phases of their pregnancy?
Yeah, the one thing I will say is that at ABCD, in addition to putting community events such as the screening of birthing justice, we provide family planning services, like I mentioned earlier. But in addition, we address all those points that we talked about, social determinants of health. So we start with education, all the way from Head Start to elderly programs. We have services that provide people with resources in terms of food security, in addition to immigration services, different services that we know will help a woman, you know, to be as healthy as possible and feel as supported as possible in order to go through this process. What I will say in terms of advice is to advocate for themselves. I think that a lot of what has happened is that many of our Black mothers don't feel that they have been heard. And when they are speaking, they're ignored. And I want to make sure that to let them know, keep asking. And if it didn't hear you in one place, go to another place. Because you know your body more than anyone does. You know, as a doctor, I can tell you, I try to learn as much as about my patients as possible, but they know their bodies better. And if you think something is wrong, then you can go to another place until you're heard.
That's our program for tonight. Thank you for joining us. On Saturday, April 27th, please tune in to our live coverage of broadcast journalist and BNN board member Sarah Ann Shaw's memorial service at 10:30 a.m. You can view on our Xfinity channels 9 and 1072, as well as Astound 15 and Fios 2161. Viewers can also stream from our website at bnnmedia.org. For BNN News, I'm Faith Mafadon. Have a great evening.